Good afternoon. This is Nevin Campanella welcoming you to the Saturday edition of Woodland Stars Radio. At Woodland Stars Radio, we believe that every human on the planet has the power to use their thoughts to change events in the mundane world. This show is all about learning how to gain control of that creative process. So let's start off by getting our co-host here, Wambui. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Greetings from New York City, everybody.
Hey, how's your weather out there? It's been hot and dry out here. What's going on in New York?
It's pretty cool today. It's cool. It's almost like fall today. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, it's coming on as quick.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
A few days ago, folks, I had an opportunity to take a look at the red moon. There was a lunar eclipse. I can't remember exactly when it was, probably maybe a week ago or so. And I usually get up around 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And sure enough, went out there, and there was this red moon. It was about halfway through the eclipse when I saw it, and it was awesome.
Oh, wow. That sounds great.
Yeah, it was. I have only seen that once before, Wambui.
Where exactly are you located? You're located?
I'm in Brigham City, Utah.
Oh, okay.
Living on the edge of perdition. Just south of me is Ogden. South of that is Salt Lake and then Provo. North of me is the wilderness. If you ask Jill, she'll tell you she lives on the edge of the wilderness. You talk to me, I'll tell you I live on the edge of perdition.
Okay.
Let's get started.
Okay.
Today is a continuation of seminars on creating your own reality. And since this is the third session, I guess it would be useful to do a little short summary. There's probably a handful of people out there listening, and I'm going to try to catch everybody up. So let's start off with the existential question, how do we prove our own existence? And most of you have come across Descartes, you know, the old I think, therefore I am business. Well, actually, Descartes finally changed that simply to say, I am, therefore I exist. And for some reason, that doesn't get publicized a whole lot. But do I use that? Almost. Close. Because what it comes down to is simply belief. If you believe you exist. Simple. Period. The end. Getting beyond the proof of your own existence is not an exceptionally difficult thing to do. I mean, you know, if you want to get real practical at it, just take a look at your hand. Is it there? Yeah, it's there. I must be here. But there's a much larger question, and that is, okay, you exist, but what are you? And within the past 100 years or so, science wanted to conclude that what we are, in fact, is our brain. And I have totally ruled that out for myself. I am not my brain. I am something other than my brain. How do I know I'm not my brain? Because after the body dies, the brain's still there, but it can't do a damn thing without the meat. Once I'm gone, that's the end of the brain. Brain no longer functions. The tissue is still there. So, if I'm not my brain, what am I? What I am is my self-awareness, and that is also a way of proving my own existence. I am self-aware. You are self-aware. We are all self-aware. And that is what you are. You are your self-awareness. Some things I haven't covered before is, does that self-awareness include my personality and my character traits? Well, it would be a very dull existence if I had to carry around these character traits that I happen to be using at this point in time. I consider existence to be a field of entertainment, or a stage, if you will, and right now I use one particular personality, typically known as Nevin, but that's not to say that I will continue using that personality or that character. I will maintain my awareness. I will maintain all the information from that character and personality, but I can be many, many other things. One of the things you cannot do to create your own reality is be a victim. If you insist on assuming the role of a victim, you might as well give it up, because you're not going to get anywhere in terms of creating your own reality. Because the minute that you start taking on the victim role, what you're literally saying is someone else is creating your reality for you. And then that becomes real. So if you start laying blame, if you start pointing fingers, if you start saying, I am a victim, forget creating your own reality. It's out the window, down the toilet. Well, once you give up the victim role, there is a couple of assumptions you need to start looking at about your existence. And they're not all that complicated. They're called a priori assumptions simply because they're the first assumptions. A priori, first, number one. And number one is, are you infinite? That's one possible assumption. The second possible assumption is that, no, you're finite. And what do I mean by these two things? The first assumption, if you assume that you are infinite, that means you always were, you always will be. Nothing is going to interfere with that process. You're in control of it, totally 100%. There isn't anything else but you. If you assume you're finite, what you're saying is, at one point, I didn't exist. And then I came into existence via a Godhead. God created me. So you have one of two assumptions you can make. Either you're infinite or either you're finite. Now, is one more valid than another? How silly. You can't prove one or the other. They're both valid. The trick here is hold on to one and don't let it go. Now, obviously, the second assumption, being finite, says you're of a religious nature. And since I know mostly about Christianity, I'll speak to the Christians for a few seconds here. Be the Christian according to the way you're taught from the master teacher. There's only one teacher of Christianity. There's no other teacher. Your minister isn't a teacher of Christianity. The Pope in Rome is not a teacher of Christianity. There's only one teacher. That was the man, Jesus Christ. Follow what he says, but do it all the way. There's a trick here, folks. You want to create your own reality, you've got to be really, really consistent. I'm very consistent with my belief in the first assumption that I am infinite, so I'm in 100% control. I believe that. If you're a Christian, then follow the teachings of the man, Jesus. Now, what did he say? What he said was, if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you can move the mulberry tree from the mountain to the ocean. Things would do what you want them to do. It's in the Bible. You don't have to believe me. Go look it up. It's in Luke. I'm simply saying to you that for the folks out there that may be Christian and think that creating their own reality is not their realm to be operating in because it may be against Christianity, that's absolutely wrong, because your teacher tells you to do that very thing. And not only tells you to do it, and that you can do it, but he says you can even do greater than the Godhead.
Mm-hmm. And also, Nevin, the Bible, sometimes that I believe that it's interpreted very wrong in order to make us not realize that power. Because the Bible, in one sense, is a book of living. It's a book about how to live, and that we take it too technical instead of listening to the underlining meanings of a lot of things that are telling us that we have the power that Jesus had, and that Jesus, I believe, was here to remind us of how magnificent we are.
Yeah, and what amazes me is that it seems to be a grand secret among Christians.
Yes.
I don't know why they don't know about it. I'm an old heathen, and I seem to know about it. So how
yes.
come I know and Christians don't? They're not reading, or they're doing only what they're told to do. And, Wambui, one of the things I think that has happened is that in order for people to gain control, that is the heads of religion, organized religion, they
mm-hmm.
have stifled a lot of things in people. Catholic Church is one that did that. They didn't even want their followers to read the Bible. They gave them a watered-down version of something called catechism. But, you know, if you read, I mean, I'm not saying anything out of the ordinary. I've read the Bible from front to back a number of times, along with a number of other books like the Quran and so on and so forth. It tells you that you can create your own reality. I think the thing, one thing that Jesus did kind of point out is he uses the word, if you have the faith of a mustard seed. What he's pointing out, folks, is that you simply don't believe. You don't believe enough. You have too many mixed messages. You simply don't believe. And when you do, when you reach that point, even though you're saying you're finite, when you reach the point of belief, you're going to be able to move that mulberry tree.
Mm-hmm.
So, both assumptions are very valid. And we need to now take a grasp at the concept of infinity and finite. Now, if you assume finite, you're assuming a beginning. Now, finite also means, traditionally, a beginning and an end. However, again, for the Christians out there, St. Thomas Aquinas kind of watered that up a little bit. And he said, finite means beginning and an end, except for humans. Humans have a beginning, but once they start, then they become infinite. So he kind of coined the phrase relative infinity. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense logically, but it will work. It will work. Okay. The thing you have to understand about infinity is you can't qualify it by degrees, and that's why I have an argument with old St. Thomas Aquinas. Now, there is a conundrum to this whole lesson of infinity. I'm sitting here trying to talk about it and define it, but the word itself says it has no parameters. Therefore, it's not definable. And yet, despite the laws of logic, each of us does have an intuitive feel for the reality of an infinite universe. Let's stop there for a second. What does that really mean? It doesn't matter which assumption you pick, whether it's the first one or the second one, because even the second one puts you into the point of being infinite after you start your existence. What does that mean for all of us? Wow. I mean, the possibilities, folks, are immense. I mean, they certainly go way beyond my imagination. I'm very involved in art and painting. I do quite a bit, and I try to put some of these thoughts onto the canvas. It's a meager attempt, admittedly, but when you think of the concept of an infinite universe, wow. I mean, it just kind of blows me away. Think of it. Think of it this way. Disneyland without end. It's always on vacation. It never ends. Wow. Now, for me, the concept of being here and my own existence, I'm here for one reason and one reason only. This is what separates the two assumptions. My reason, because I take the first assumption, being infinite, is I'm doing what I am in right now for the sake of entertainment. If you take the second assumption, you might be offended by the concept of entertainment, because, come on, how can we start calling wars, pestilence, and everything else that's going on entertainment? Well, it is. It is a form of entertainment, but I understand quite well why you might want to say you're learning something, you're having a lesson of some sort, because that also then meets the practical issue of being in a religion. In other words, if a God created you, whatever that reason was, most religions will tell you that you're here to learn and to grow. I'm not. If you take the first assumption, you're not doing anything other than having a good time with journeys. Now, we got to get down to a point here where we can start understanding what I mean by entertainment. Is a war entertaining? Well, it must be, because we keep doing it. I mean, since the beginning of time, we seem to really like wars, right? I mean, it's always there. And on the side, I mean, if I if I don't like something, I usually don't do it. We, you know, as humans, we must really like it. We must be very entertained by it. So we do a lot of it. Are we entertained by violence? Without a question. We are very entertained by violence. How can I say that? Look around you, folks. Try to read a newspaper that isn't filled with violence. Try to pick a video that isn't totally violent. I mean,
in fact, those are the newspapers that sell the most, the ones that have a lead story that's about something really violent.
Yeah,
if it bleeds, it leads. So we love that, but we would tell you that we don't. But at the same time, we're drawn to that.
Yeah, why do we do that, Wimbley? Why do we say, oh, we really don't like it, but then we go and buy the videos and the newspapers and stuff? I'd like someone to explain that to me.
Because I think we believe that it's, again, against our religion. It's not a good thing to say that, you know, we're into this, but every indication proves that. But so we're really talking one thing but walking another thing.
Yeah.
And
I think what you just said was we're not walking our talk. What you saying? We certainly seem to really enjoy the entertainment value of violence. I mean, I try to rent entertaining videos, and lately it's been almost impossible to get something that, you know, isn't. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie Saw. I was stupid enough when it first came out to rent it. I didn't get any of the others. It's all kind of like really gory, gaggy, people killing, maiming, torturing. I mean, it's really bizarre. What I've noticed is that within the past few years, almost every movie that they call in the genre horror has to do with mutilation of some sort. Humans mutilating humans.
Here in New York, you know, in the subway, we have the subway system, and they put all of the upcoming movie posters along the wall. And just the other day, I was thinking, I can't look at the wall. I can't look at the wall because it's all really ugly stuff. It's really ugly, negative stuff. So I'm thinking, I'm not going to look at the wall. Don't look at the wall.
Yeah, try not to.
And so we see this. It bombards us everywhere we go, you know.
There's no way to get through New York without seeing it. But, you know, I don't know how you would do it. I mean, you'd have to have somebody lead you around while you had blinders on, and the other poor soul would be taking it all in. But it is. We're totally surrounded by it. We surround ourselves by it, and we seem to be entertained by it. Okay, now what does that mean for the Christian? Can we get out of this word of entertainment for you guys? Sure. There is a lesson to be learned here, and that is we do know, at an intuitive level, that it's not nice. I mean, just think of it now as a lesson. We're here to view the lesson, see the lesson, and learn something from it. So if you haven't learned anything yet, learn this, that we are not, any of us, even as Assumption One people, we are not walking our talk. We need to do something about it. Now, are you going to change the world? Are you going to change the United States government? Are you going to change all the wars going on? Nope. You ain't. You ain't going to do it. But can you change you? Jill had told me a story a while back, and I don't know where she heard it or where she read it, but it has to do, I guess it took place during the Vietnam era. And one man would show up with a candle in front of the White House every day during the Vietnam War. And he would just stand there and hold this candle. He'd have the candle in. He had this candle. He did it every day. I guess what happened is the reporters finally asked him about the candle, and they said, do you really think that you lighting that candle is going to stop all this violence? You really think that that is going to happen? That kind of change will come about? And the man simply said, I'm not here to do that. I'm holding this candle so that nothing affects me, so that I don't become violent. He's taking care of his own space. If each of us Well, think of it this way. If each of us held out our hand to one other person in a peaceful gesture, everybody on the planet, just think of it. There wouldn't be any more wars, would there?
No.
That's all we have to do. Every one of us, just hold out our hand to the person next to us. If you're listening and you have someone in the room with you, give them a hug right now. Why not? If every one of us did that, you would see an immense drop in the violence. Enough with this violence stuff. Let me get on here in terms of infinity. It's a difficult kind of thing to understand, the concept of infinity. But the word infinite is all-inclusive, such as infinite possibilities. Now, if possibilities are infinite, then all conclusions are valid, even if they contradict each other. Now remember, folks, even though you might have started out in a finite position, you were created, you are now infinite. And that means, in terms of infinity, understanding infinity, the concept of infinity is all-inclusive. That means every conclusion is valid, no matter what it is. So I am saying to you, well, I'm taking the first assumption, I created myself. Or I always was. I always existed. But in terms of infinity, since it's all-inclusive, both assumptions occur. Both assumptions are valid. Hey, folks, I know this is tough to get through, but that's what this is. But that's what the term infinity is about. Now, it's difficult to grasp because we tend to perceive everything as ratio data. Infinity is so tough because our whole life has been involved in the concepts of ratio. Well, what does that mean? It means something either is or is not. We contrive an absolute zero point. What do you know that is ratio data? What's the simplest thing? A ruler. Well, you know, we made up a 12-inch ruler. It's got a beginning and it's got an end. There's an absolute beginning because you go past the stick and there's nothing there. That's ratio data. It has an absolute zero position. And our whole world that we look at seems to be contrived of those kinds of things, at least at the macro level. Now, at the micro level, quantum mechanics has shown us that that is not quite true. But let's just stick at the things we understand. The macro level. It's the basis of duality. Something either is hot or cold, on or off. Now, using the concept of infinity, the possibility exists that something can be both hot and cold. And therefore, everything maintains the status of being relative. In terms of infinity, that's what it means. Now the question is relative to what? It's relative to your expectation and belief. Now can I demonstrate this to you? Yeah, this isn't tough. I'll ask you a question. At what temperature does something shift from hot to cold? Ha! Gotcha. You see, the duality we experience is a product of our expectation and belief. And we attribute to the object these beliefs. As an example, what we perceive as hot in the winter may not be perceived as hot in the heat of summer because you have all that hot air around it. Things are very relative. Extremely relative. There are no black and whites. There really aren't. Everything is in shades and shades and shades. It's what makes it a fascinating world to be in. There isn't just one line to walk. You can walk an infinite number of lines. So at what temperature does something shift from hot to cold? It shifts from hot to cold depending on what you believe, depending on the experience at the moment and what is surrounding it. Now, in the most strict sense of the term, infinite means there are no truths since all is possible. Now, I know a lot of people don't like that part of this because they want to believe one size fits all. That's what religion attempts to do. One size fits all. And if you don't seem to fit, they'll shoot you or kill you or do something. But the word infinite means if you take a look at the grand scope of it, there is no truth, because everything is possible. Now, to confuse the issue, the concept of infinity also implies, now hold on here, that a single truth is possible, because all conclusions are valid, even if they contradict each other. Wow, what did I do? Did I just contradict myself? Absolutely. In an infinite sense, there are no truths since everything is possible. But if something is infinite and can be all-inclusive, it also implies that a single truth is possible. Wow, admittedly, this is all circular. But then again, that in itself describes the concept of infinity in graphic form. No beginning and no end. Well, I use the example of hot and cold only as a means of describing the concept of infinity. And it is, believe me, it is not intended to describe the nature of the universe, that which is everything we perceive. I used it only to describe the concept of infinity. And the a priori assumption, of course, is only in regards to the singular event of our self-awareness. We are infinite. And that singular event, by our definition, is not qualified by degree. We exist, period. So, it's from this vantage point that we begin the process of creation. Wow. Am I finally ever going to get to this point where I'm actually going to talk about creation? Yeah, we're getting there. Creation, kind of like a stage magician. We have an appreciative audience, which is ourself and others, who are not aware of the props up our sleeves. Now, those props up our sleeves are everything outside the realm of self-awareness, which is the entire perceived universe and that which is not perceived. Now, have I confused everybody? I'm sure I have. Think of it this way, folks. You're not only the magician, you're also part of the audience. And the magician has got props up his or her sleeves. And you know it. You absolutely know it. But for the sake of creation, those props are everything now outside the realm of our own self-awareness. So, I'm going to make believe now that I'm not aware of those props. And what is outside our self-awareness? Everything in the entire perceived universe and that which is not perceived. You got to throw that in there. And the reason is because existence means everything that is and everything that is not. There's that darn old infinity concept again. Now, when the magician walks onto the stage, everything that will be produced already exists, but it's not in the direct view of the audience. The magician comes on stage, the doves that are going to start flying around and everything else already exists, but it's not in your direct view. You can't see through his sleeve. What is perceived as being magically created is, in fact, existing up the sleeve of the magician. Our universe is literally up our sleeves. Aha.
I like that concept, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That, you know, Wambui, this is where creation comes in, because what it really comes down to is that everything already does exist. Now all you have to do is pull it out of your sleeve. You don't have to, and again, in a sense I'm saying you really don't have to create anything. It's already there. It's,
yes.
It's up your sleeve. It's,
yeah.
Everything in existence exists. Now all you have to do is, like the magician, pull it out of the sleeve. Our universe is literally up our sleeves. Now, this is only part of the act. Now, there is a magic of sorts that can only be described as the props which are not revealed. Now, if you were to strip the magician, these props would not fall out of his sleeve because they are everything that are not in perceived existence. Whoa. This is a tough concept. It's tough to even describe because it comes down to saying everything that is not. In other words, what you, the magician, have up your sleeve is everything that is, which is your expectation and belief, and everything that is not, no expectation, and no belief. Now, this is really, really tough. Creation is a function of pulling something out from the sleeve. What has the appearance of just appearing is actually a shift in perception and awareness. That which was not, now is. Now, in this sense, the infinite self-awareness includes the sleeves of the magician. Therefore, our model of infinity can be applied to the entire universe, that which is and that which is not. Since infinity is all-inclusive, then self-awareness is also part of that which is not. Whoa, I just knocked myself out of existence.
Yeah.
But that's what the word infinity does, Wimbui. It includes everything. I mean, you just simply cannot get away with it. It drove the Greeks mad. I mean, they went crazy with the concept because they started understanding the very things that I'm talking about, the contradictions.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, I can see how that would. Because when I think about infinity, it's a real big, it's kind of like a high because you realize that it just, how big it is, it goes on, it is everything, but it's nothing, and it's, I can see how it could drive a person nuts, just trying to,
It's so awesome.
Yeah,
half the times I walk around my mouth hanging open, just looking at everything that I'm seeing and realizing that it's existing in terms of infinity in all parts of the universe at this one same nanosecond. I mean, it's a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Now, can we come down to one example of our self-awareness that is part of that which is not? Sure. Most of us experience it every night. That which is not is the dream state. It's certainly part of your self-awareness, and it's part of that which is not, because that hasn't even occurred yet. The dream, you know, tonight, you're going to lay down, you roll over, you get that pillow nice and comfortable, you're nice and relaxed, you had a couple of beers right after dinner, so you're feeling really good. You fall into that dream state. Well, that's part of something which is not, because it hasn't occurred yet. Now, in a dream that you have not yet had, now hold on to this one, in a dream that you have not yet had, there will be a sense of self-awareness. And that dream may have nothing to do with your current state of self-awareness. I mean, think about it. You have dreams in which you can't relate the you now to the you in the dream. They seem like two different people, don't they? It can definitely be that. Two separate self-awarenesses. The dream.
I was going to say also that I remember reading something by Wayne Dyer once where he talks about when he used to, you know, do therapy sessions with people, and he had a woman that was so depressed. And so the way he got her to get over that was he said, "Do you notice you're depressed?" And she said, "Yes, I notice I'm very depressed." And he said, "Well, then go with the noticer." Be the person who's noticing.
Who's noticed. Yeah, do the noticing. Become the observer.
Yeah.
Well, as everybody is listening to me speak here, as you're listening, Wambui, you right now have a sense of self-awareness, which includes an entire history of life events. Even when I point you out and use your name, all of a sudden your history comes forward. It's right there at the surface. In a dream state, this history that you have right now doesn't seem to apply to events in the dream. We have dreams where our current history, as I'm being awake right now in my history, I know damn well I'm going to have a dream tonight. There's absolutely no bearing relationship to this person, this self-awareness I am now. The dream seems to have a totally different self-awareness. My word, there are people who come into the dream that I seem to know very well, but I don't know them in this state, but I seem to know them in a dream state. And what's interesting, I don't know if this happens to everyone, I have never questioned, in my own dreams, I have never questioned my history. I mean, you know, you're sitting in a dream, you're doing stuff, and do you ever say, hey, what's my history? Like, where was I born? Who's mom and dad? You don't do that in a dream. You just accept it.
You just accept
that you are. You accept your self-awareness as is. And all the events going around you, no matter how bizarre they might seem in this state, in the state you're in, they don't seem bizarre at all. In other words, I don't know, let me come up with an example. I don't know, you pick up a cup of coffee, you're drinking coffee, and all of a sudden it turns into a mug of beer. In a dream, it seems perfectly normal. But now, in this state, you know, they would start hauling me away if I said, well, yeah, this happens to me. I start drinking coffee and it turns into beer.
Or flying, when we fly in our dreams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many grand events in a dream you take for granted, and we're going to cover some of that here in a minute. What I'm trying to get across to everyone is that your sense of self-awareness extends into that infinite realm, and the dream way, the dream doorway, I believe, is the doorway to that infinite self. Because what I'm going to tell you is that the dream is as real as this is real in terms of being awake. There's no difference to me. One is as real as the other. Well, people like to argue about this particular concept. They like to think that the state of what they call awake is the real sense of existence, and that the dream state is some sort of hallucination. They use the word illusion, delusion, hallucination. Well, that dream state often has a history of self-awareness that is quite different than the history you're thinking of now. The source of that dream state history is your self-awareness on stage performing the magic act. That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you that through the dream process, you can get in touch with that self-awareness of you, start questioning those histories, and you can use that self-awareness to start creation in this realm. The source of that dream state history, your self-awareness is on stage performing the magic act. We may like to believe that one history is real and the other is contrived, but the simple fact is that you can only validate that both are perceived. That's all you can do. You can't validate to me that your dream state is less real than this thing that we call the awake state. How are you going to validate that? Because when you go to sleep tonight and you start dreaming, if someone were to ask you in the dream, validate that this is not real, you'd say, well, what, are you crazy? Of course this is real, but that's the dream state. You see how it goes on and on and on, folks? We validate our self-awareness typically by having others reflect that self-awareness. They respond to us. I'm self-aware because Bambooey's on the other end of the line and she's responding to some of the things I'm saying. The validation of self-awareness occurs in both the dream state and what we refer to as being awake. What we often fail to recognize, now put in brackets here, remember, is that we create the audience in both cases. People would like to tell you we do not create the audience in the awake state, only in the dream state. And I'm telling you bullshit. We do it in both cases. We are the magician. We're creating the audience. Everything that's on that stage, we put there. Whether you call it the awake state or the sleeping state or the chance to dream, we put it there. But when we get down to the dream state itself.
And Nevin, when you talk about the audience, do you mean the people that we attract into our lives, the things that we attract? Are you talking about the audience in that sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm talking about everything in your perceived realm, whether it's your mom right now, whether it's your daughters, whatever it is.
Right.
Because outside your self-awareness, you put it there. You are the magician. I'm saying there is nothing in your perception that you didn't create to begin with. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay.
And what I mean by creation is you put it into your perception. In other words, you change what you're looking at. It always existed. There's no other term to use other than create, and it's a bad word to use because it makes it sound as if you're starting with nothing and you get to something. And that's really confusing, and it confuses the issue. You have to understand that at least when I'm using the word create, all I'm really saying is you pulled it out of your sleeve. It was already up there.
Mm-hmm.
It always existed. You simply pulled it out of your sleeve. You didn't actually make something from nothing. How could you? If everything is infinite, how could you make anything? It always was. That's the conundrum of infinity. There is no such thing as non-existence until you start playing with the term infinity. The dream creation from our self-awareness is actually a pretty simple and straightforward process. The stage setting, script, and theme are selected by our self-awareness. And within seconds, we're transported to a playground of infinite stimuli. I mean, the dreams are fantastic. And they come in all sizes and shapes. Some of them are really fun. I laugh. Some of them are kind of sad. I cry. Some of them are scary. They scare the crap out of me. But it's all entertainment. It's all entertaining. I mean, I can't deny that I've had a dream that wasn't entertaining. I can't remember a boring dream. It's always entertaining. It's always something weird going on, you know? And I wake up the next morning and go, oh, my God, wow, that was really weird. Or sometimes I wake up and I say, thank God that was only a dream.
Yes.
You must have had some of those, Rambouille. You know, have you ever woken up from a dream and say, oh, my God, thank God that was only a dream?
Yeah, but sometimes there's a little space where when you're first waking up from the dream, you're not sure.
Yeah.
If it had really, what dimension, and that I guess where the mind, it blows the mind because you've had those dreams where you're saying, oh my God, was that really a dream or was that
real? Well, was that real? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it happens all the time, and the reason that it happens is because there is no difference between the awake reality and the dream reality. It's all real. It's all quite real. You have a history in the dream. It's a very real history. You're interacting with people. You're doing stuff. You have a history. It's very real at that time. Just as this point in time, it's very real. It's all real. And you are in charge of it all. You're the director, the choreographer. You do all the music scores. You do all the scripts. You do all the dancing. You hire all the actors on the stage. You put them all there. It's one great grand scheme. Let's get back to the two words, entertainment and experience, or lesson, if you will. Does it still work? Absolutely. For me, it's entertaining. It is extremely entertaining, and being in an infinite universe, you know what that means? My self-awareness is never going to get bored. I will never get bored. I live in an infinite existence. Same thing goes for the finite concept. In terms of this is a learning experience, you have lessons to learn forever and ever. And because you have so many lessons to learn, dear folks, you're never going to get bored. Never, 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 never. You're never going to find yourself sitting in infinity going, oh, geez, you know, I really wish there was something to do. That ain't going to happen. That's never going to happen because infinite. I will have infinite entertainment, and some people are going to have infinite and infinite learning experiences. Now, the most remarkable aspect of the whole dream concept, you know, we transport ourselves into this infinite stimuli. The most remarkable aspect of this is not the creation. No, because I know that we create constantly. You can't not create. The most remarkable aspect is how we reflect upon what we created. When we wake up, when we return from the dream, what do? Our tendency is to search for meaning of what we call dream symbols. That is, we attempt to interpret the dream. Now, this is exactly how we deny, listen what I'm saying, this is how we deny the reality of the dream itself. not wanting to believe that it was as real a world as the one we experienced while awake, we attempt to use the dream experience to explain our non-dream state motivations. That's how we deny the reality of the dream. We say, oh, it obviously has something to do with what I did yesterday or what I'm going to do tomorrow. You know what? That is really strange. An analogy would be something like returning from a vacation trip to Disney World and then using those experiences, such as talking to Mickey Mouse, as explanations of our behavior after we return home. Now, the interpretation from the dream of Disney World, the interpretations, they're valid because it was all created by our self-awareness. But if we focus only on the interpretation of symbols, what do? We distract ourselves from the concept of creation itself. If you want to understand the creative process, you begin by first focusing your attention in the right direction. Let go of the interpretations and strive for conscious control of the dream state. Now, this is number one on the hit parade for creating your own reality. You go into your dreams, get away from this interpretation stuff. It's not going to do you any good. And how do I say this so loosely, since there are literally hundreds of books written on dream interpretation? How do I know this? Well, first of all, folks, I just happen to be a psychologist. I happen to have spent 30 years or better working in the field. There is no such thing as one symbol fitting everybody. What a bunch of malarkey. This is most of what you read about in terms of dream interpretation. People make it up. They're making it up, folks. I get big bucks for being a psychologist, I'm telling you. They make this crap up and they write books on it. And they sell it because it's kind of fun to read about, gee, I dreamt of a pine tree. That must mean I'm going to have something piney in my house. Come on, get real. This dream interpretation is a pile of crap. One size does not fit all. Do the symbols mean something for you? Yes. Do they mean things across people? Absolutely not. If you happen to dream of a horseshoe, it might be extremely important to you in this awake state, but it has absolutely nothing to do with anyone else. It does not generalize to other people. You create your own reality. No one is creating it for you. We do not have a reality that generalizes to everyone. Each of us creates our own. Please, if you do anything, don't spend any more money on dream interpretation books. I can't tell you how many times I've had people come into my office when I was working in the field saying, gee, I had this dream or that dream. What does it mean? I look them straight in the eye and said, how the hell would I know that? It's your dream. Get away from that stuff. Because if you start focusing on that, you're going to really lose an opportunity to really start creating your own reality. Now, why am I focusing on the dream state? Because you can have an immediate experience in creating some really wow stuff. And matter of fact, Wambui brought it up before when she talked about flying. And many of us have had that flying dream. So what I'm saying to you now is if you want to begin the process of creating your own reality and you want to have a lot of fun right away, you can do that by practicing what's called lucid dreaming. And that means that you're in the dream state and you are aware that you're dreaming. That's what lucid dreaming means. In other words, you go to sleep tonight, the dream starts, and inside the dream, all of a sudden you say to yourself, holy shit, I'm dreaming. What can you do with that? Actually, you can do quite a bit. And it's an absolutely exhilarating experience. Because, as Wambui stated, you can fly. Yes, you can. And you don't even need wings. I mean, you can do some amazing, amazing things in a lucid dream. Actually, you can do anything. Now, there's a variety of methods for training lucid dreaming. And most of the methods rely on some sort of mental practice during the awake state. So what I'm saying to you is, if you will practice lucid dreaming, you're going to gain control of the dream. You're going to be aware that you're dreaming, and you can do some really fun stuff. It will help you create in the awake state. Now, as I said, most of the methods rely on some sort of mental practice during the awake state. To initiate the lucid dream, you first practice a questioning of your current mental state. What do I mean by that? You're walking around during the day and you're looking at stuff and you start saying, is this a dream? Say it out loud. Is this a dream? Is it a dream right now that you're listening to Nevin on the radio? Is this a dream? During the day, while engaged in normal activity, just start asking yourself what you are experiencing. Am I dreaming or am I awake? Start looking at it and say it over and over. The idea is to develop a pattern or a habit of thought which will transfer to the dream state. See, if you start a habit of it, you stand a real good chance of that habit crossing over into the dream state where you will start saying, am I dreaming? And then conclude that you are. It will happen. How do I know? I've done it. And you don't have to believe me. Go on the net. I know the net is full of lies, but let me tell you, there's some truth there. You can find places about lucid dreaming, and they have forums where people go in and they start helping each other out, trying to get more and more involved in lucid dreaming. And why do they do it? Well, they're not really doing it because they're trying to create their own reality in the awake state. They're doing it mainly because it's a lot of fun. It really is. And whatever experience you want, I don't care what it is, whatever you can conjure up, you can get in that lucid dream. As a matter of fact, it might surprise you to know that some people who have physical disabilities in this awake state, for instance, they can't walk. In the dream state, they do walk. And in the lucid dream state, they run. Practice the lucid dreaming. The exercises for gaining control over lucid dreaming are very simple. Now, that alone is not going to produce creation efficiency.
Nevin, just want to say, this is so interesting. I don't want to interrupt you again, but my batteries, I'm hearing a beep, so I'm just saying that I might be gone any minute. I'm away from my home, and I'm on a cell phone, and the battery, I'm noticing that my battery is going. So I just want to let you know if I'm suddenly not here.
Okay.
What you're saying,
you disappeared into the universe.
Yes, but I'm going to hang in here as long as I can. Just wanted you to know if I disappear, that's what happened.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left. We're coming up to the 55-minute mark here in about 2 minutes. Where was I? Okay, well, I'm saying that the gaining control over dreams, lucid dreaming, it's not enough to produce creation efficiency. It's your everyday common thoughts that will inhibit the creation process. Now, as an example, if you have had a nightmare and state to someone the next morning, I had a nightmare last night, there's an implication that you were a victim of something. You had something. It happened to you. Now, this type of thought and speech is as common as dirt, and I do it, and it becomes embedded in our everyday language. To avoid this problem, practice structuring your sentences so that they clearly state your responsibility towards controlling events. Now, I know this seems, right now, this seems trite, but I'm telling you, folks, if you practice it, you're really going to improve your creation efficiency. Using the example above about the nightmare, the responsibility could be expressed as, I created a really weird nightmare last night, rather than saying, I had a nightmare last night. In the second one, you're really pointing out that you created it. Now, on the surface, it seems trivial, but if you add up all the non-responsible statements made during the course of the day, you're going to discover that your self-perception is one of being a victim. As long as your statements imply the victim role, the creative process will always appear something magical and random. And what you have created, that is extracted from your magician's sleeve, is a role of being a victim who has little control over life events. So, let's move this along, folks. Don't be a victim. Practice lucid dreaming. Get down to the point in your conversation and your thoughts where the words are changing. Accept responsibility in every sentence. It's a lot to do, and I know that you can't do it all day long. Try it for, give yourself 1 hour tomorrow, practicing not being a victim. You're not going to make one statement that doesn't include your absolute 100% responsibility for everything. Folks, we are out of time. We're to the 55-minute mark. Wambui, if you're still there, I wish you well. Wish you good night. And by the way, you're on the air tomorrow. Good luck with your show. I thank you all for being here. I have maybe one or two more of these seminars, and then that's probably going to be the end of the Saturday sessions. From that point on, we'll just do only the Sunday show. And we thank our audience for listening. Wish you all a wonderful day. Don or Seth, whoever there, that's a wrap.